Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Your job. You took it because it seemed interesting, fun even. But now you spend most days sitting in status meetings, updating spreadsheets, and slogging through email after email after email. Enough. Get back to the work you want to do with Asana. Asana strips away the bottlenecks and busy work so teams have more time for doing stuff like pushing boundaries and solving problems. You know, real work. Visit asana.com to try it free. That's asana.com.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and at 14 hours GMT on Friday, the 27th of March, these are our main stories. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson announces he's tested positive for the coronavirus. The Chinese President Xi Jinping tells Donald Trump that Washington and Beijing should work together to tackle the pandemic, and why aid workers are so fearful of an outbreak in Syrian refugee camps. Also in this podcast...
Everybody is equally responsible. We cannot just leave this matter to just the leaders and the health ministries.
Ugandan singer and politician Bobby Wine releases new music to try to hammer some messages home. And as people stay at home to avoid contact with others, how safe is takeaway food? We begin this podcast with the news that the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has tested positive for the coronavirus. In a video, he outlined mild symptoms.
Hi, folks. I want to bring you up to speed with something that's happening today, which is that I've developed mild symptoms of the coronavirus. That's to say, a temperature and a persistent cough. And on the advice of the chief medical officer, I've taken a test that has come out positive. So I am working from home, I'm self-isolating, and that's entirely the right thing to do. But be in no doubt that I can continue, thanks to the wizardry of modern technology, to communicate with all my top team to lead the national fight back against coronavirus.
More than 540,000 people around the world have tested positive for the virus. Our political correspondent Rob Watson told us more about the implications of this new diagnosis.
I think he's trying to say, look at me, let me be an example. I'm working from home, just like I told others to. I'm self-isolating. And so, if you like, I think he's trying to make an example of himself, saying, look, you know, you need to do as I do, as well as in the past, what I said. I mean, certainly to look at the video and what he said, I mean, it does seem that he's suffering from mild symptoms. I mean, in many ways, he's his normal sort of chipper, boisterous self. But of course, I imagine that Mr. Johnson and those around him will be hoping that, of course, his symptoms remain mild.
Obviously, as Prime Minister, he's in contact with an awful lot of people all of the time, including every senior member of the British government and, on occasion, Queen Elizabeth. What do we know about the contacts he's had with such people and the impact of all of that?
Let's deal with Queen Elizabeth first. Now, Downing Street have said that he last saw the Queen on the 11th of March, so I think that'll give some comfort that that is some time back. I think the other issue, in a way, is the more important one. I mean, clearly, Mr. Johnson has been holding many, many meetings with the scientists, those leading the medical fight, the other politicians leading the fight, as he would put it, against the virus. And I think that really is the big concern here. I mean, what exposure has there been to other members of the government to the virus? I mean, it's certainly the case that a lot of the work, we know that some of the cabinet meetings have been done using remote technology. They've been virtual cabinet meetings. But I think that will be the concern, because I think provided Mr. Johnson's own personal condition remains mild, so he's not in any way in danger, I think the big deal here isn't that he's got the virus. It'll be who else has he given it to, and do they end up having as mild a symptoms as he appears to have.
Another concern from a human point of view is that we know Boris Johnson's partner is pregnant and lives with him in Downing Street. Do we know if he's isolating himself from her?
Yes, that is what we understand, that he's in one part of the flat above, funnily enough, number 11 Downing Street, next door to number 10. So he is keeping his distance from her. And as to whether his girlfriend, who is, as you say, is expecting, whether she has the virus, I mean, we have heard nothing along those lines yet from Downing Street.
And just finally on testing, there's a lot of controversy in Britain about the fact that even members of staff who work for the health service can't get a test in order to see whether they have the virus or not and go back to work if they're able to. And yet both Prince Charles and Boris Johnson seem to be able to get a test very easily.
Yes, and I'm sure that will spark a certain debate on social media of saying, look, it's one law for the super privileged and one law for everybody else. I mean, what the government has been saying is, look, we do want to do more tests. The problem is just getting hold of the kits, because obviously every government in every country around the world is desperate for these tests. And I suppose that the case would be made by the government. I'm not sure they've felt obliged to make it yet, that testing the Prime Minister would count as a priority just because of the wide contacts that he has, not because he's somehow better than anybody else, I guess is the way they would put it.
That was Rob Watson. And the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, has tested positive too. Over the past year, US-China relations have been strained, mainly due to the long-running trade dispute between the world's two biggest economies. And more recently, there's been tension surrounding the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic, with both countries pointing the finger at each other at one stage. But now the Chinese leader Xi Jinping says they need to collaborate to tackle the virus. In a phone conversation with President Trump, Xi Jinping said China was ready to enhance cooperation and support to the US in order to contain COVID-19. Our Asia-Pacific editor, Michael Bristow, told us more.
It's first of all worth noting that this is the first phone call between these two leaders, as you said, the two biggest countries, two biggest economies in the world, since the beginning of February. An extraordinary fact, really, when you see the challenges facing the country. What President Xi told Mr. Trump was that, first of all, some practical measures. Could you help Chinese people stuck in the United States make sure they get proper help, proper treatment if they fall ill? President Xi then turned to sort of the global aspect, suggesting, really asking President Trump to work together so that the two countries could help other countries across the world defeat this pandemic. So that was really the message that President Xi gave to Mr. Trump.
Now, the message coming the other way is a big change, because President Trump has lost no opportunity to call this the Chinese virus and to criticise China's handling of the outbreak there. And yet today, none of that.
Yes, a real sea change from President Trump, as you mentioned. In the last few weeks, he's been constantly referring to this illness as the Chinese virus, emphasizing for his own political purposes, no doubt, that this virus isn't anything to do with him. It came from China, so he shouldn't be blamed for it. China got very angry about that. And President Trump has said over recent days that he isn't going to refer to it as a Chinese virus. And indeed, if you look at the tweet he put out after this phone call with President Xi, it shows a marked different tone to what he's used previously. He talked about how China had undergone a real trial. It had a great understanding of the virus, suggested that the two countries were going to work together. And he ended the tweet by saying great respect, a really different tone from the one he had struck previously.
That was Michael Bristow. Let's look now at what its developers hope anyway could be a game changer in rapid diagnostics for the coronavirus. Bola Masuro spoke to the man behind the project, director of the laboratory at Bosch Healthcare Solutions in Germany, Martin Schulz.
The Vivalytic COVID-19 test from Bosch is able to determine an infection with a new coronavirus and 9 other respiratory viruses within 2.5 hours from a patient sample. The test is designed to be used near the patient directly at the point of care. And with this, infected patients can be isolated quickly to curb the spread of the pandemic and break the chain of infection faster.
How is it that you're able to detect it so quickly? Because I think the more recent one we heard, which was being developed in the Pasteur Institute in Senegal, was perhaps even 10 hours. But this is 2.5 hours.
Vivalytic is a fully automated molecular diagnostic platform designed specifically for the use at the point of care, and the tests look for genetic fingerprints of viruses in a patient sample. It can be used directly where the sample is collected and provide results directly electronically at the point of treatment. That eliminates the need for sample logistics and saves a lot of time. Also, it requires minimal hands-on time. Once a test is started, the operator can walk away. The system is easy to use. Minimal training is required. That means hospital staff without any specific laboratory experience can also operate it.
So if you say it's still in the approval process, that means it hasn't yet been rolled out. I ask that only because people would wonder why it's then not stemming the tide that we see that is wreaking havoc in Spain, wreaking havoc in Italy.
Yes, we target availability in those regions in April. The test is currently undergoing heavy testing in our internal laboratories, and we have released it on a research use only basis to certain locations that support us in gathering additional data points to complete our approvals.
Okay, so how soon then do you think, Martin, before it can be approved and then rolled out?
Our goal is to have this finalized for Germany and other EU regions in the month of April.
Which is just around the corner in a way. And for other nations, what would they have to do to get hold of it?
It is a little too early to provide you with firm timelines. We are still in touch with the authorities in the other non-EU regions.
And would this also include not just in Europe, but say Americas and also Africa, Latin America?
Yes, we are in touch with authorities in all of those regions currently.
Scientist Martin Schulz in Germany. Now, we have been asking you for your ideas on how to stay well and upbeat while in lockdown. Mira Marinkova here in London sent hers in, and Steph from the Global News Pod team voiced up her email for her.
Here are my top tips and what I have found helpful and cheerful during these rough times. One, when's a better time to study than now? Ivy League universities are offering free online courses on various interesting subjects that anyone can take part in. I have started an online course about Egyptian culture with Harvard. Two, learn a language or refresh your memory on one you've studied before. I've been practicing my Japanese every day. Three, we have sunny days in London. Open your curtains and windows, light up a candle in the morning, and do a 15 to 20 minute yoga to stay active. These are some of the many activities I'm doing every day. Life does not stop here. Those who are blessed enough to be safe and healthy should take this opportunity to work on themselves. Staying home isn't the worst thing that can happen to us. Stay home, save lives.
And thank you, Mira. Peter Lau on Twitter also sent in a picture of a packet of mixed nuts that has been painstakingly and rather artistically separated out into a geometric pattern. Thank you for that, Peter. Just record yourself saying who and where you are and share your advice on staying okay while in lockdown. globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. Still to come.
One final rule, we make sure that the doorknobs and light switches are cleaned once a day.
Living in a house share and staying safe, a quick how-to guide. There have been stark warnings from doctors, aid workers and the United Nations that camps for the displaced in northwest Syria could be devastated by an outbreak of the coronavirus there. Almost 1 million people have fled their homes in the area since December, when the Syrian regime launched an offensive to retake Idlib, the last opposition-held province. Health officials fear that as many as 100,000 people might die unless medical supplies arrive urgently. There are, so far, no confirmed cases in Idlib. From Istanbul, our international correspondent Ola Girin reports.
Civil defence volunteers, head to toe in white protective suits, are spraying tents cobbled together with plastic sheeting. In this opposition-held corner of Syria, that's all many of the displaced have got. They are trapped in camps, exposed to the elements, and now it's feared to COVID-19. Fatoum al-Muhammad and her husband are in their 70s and live in Atma camp, a sprawling settlement near the border with Turkey. Their grandchildren are with them. the youngest just 3. Fatoum says they have nowhere to turn.
We go to the medical point with our kids, but it's shut. We don't have money. We only have God's mercy. We are scared. The streets are not clean. Nobody is clean. We used to work in our lands back in the village. We fled and came back here to the dirt. We get water once every 2 or 3 days.
Others who live in the camp, like Ziar Bakur, say if powerful nations can't fight the coronavirus, how can they?
If it's spread in the camps in the north, it will be a real disaster. There's nothing here to help us cope. Big countries like Italy, America and China have suffered from it. So us here in the camps, what can we do to fight it?
Until this week, doctors in Idlib couldn't even start testing for the virus. They have now received a few hundred kits. So far, the results have been negative. Medical staff in Idlib are overwhelmed as it is, something we witnessed this month when we visited the main maternity hospital in the city.
Now, see that?
Dr. Ikram was struggling to keep premature babies alive in a place where the health system itself needs life support. She was crying out for help.
If you see every day our miserable condition here, why cannot do anything? How you are sleeping? How you are sleeping?
Now Idlib is facing a new battle. And once again, doctors are begging the world to help. A leading health official in the province told us the virus could tear through the camps, claiming 100,000 lives. It's not a question of if an epidemic is coming, he warned, but of when.
Ola Guerin reporting. Nigeria is recalling disease control experts from abroad as part of measures aimed at controlling the outbreak there. President Muhammadu Buhari has urged people not to succumb to panic. He's also announced new restrictions, including on shipping and extra money for Lagos State, which has been hardest hit. From Abuja, Chris Iwoko reports.
The new funding was accompanied by the introduction of new measures after Nigeria recorded 14 new cases of COVID-19, the highest number of confirmed cases in a single day. In a series of tweets, President Buhari said cargo vessels would not be allowed to dock in Nigeria unless they have been at sea for more than 14 days and their crew has been tested. Oil and gas vessels are, however, exempted. He has also directed the Nigeria Center for Disease Control to draft all its recently retired personnel back into service, as well as the immediate return of all staff and experts of the NCDC who are away on training or international assignments.
Chris Iwoko in Abuja. Now, if you share a house or flat, wherever you are in the world, you might be wondering how to keep yourself and your fellow housemates safe from coronavirus. One of the most watched videos on the BBC News website today is about just that.
Hi, my name's Ella and I live in North London with 4 other people. Now, one of our housemates is in the high-risk category, so I'm going to show you some of the measures that we've put in place to keep everybody safe.
First things first, and no prizes for this one, we wash our hands as soon as we get in.
Even though we've got a fair amount of space where we live, it's quite difficult to remember to keep the recommended government distance of 2 metres, which is about the length of a small elephant. Thankfully, the hygiene measures we've put in place are a lot easier to keep up. In the bathroom.
We keep the bathroom as clean as possible. No more shared hand towels, we separate our toothbrushes, and we even have our own personal supply of loo roll.
In the kitchen.
No more shared tea towels, and each housemate has their own cutlery and crockery. We keep the place clean and anti-bac the dinner table after every use. One final rule, we make sure that the doorknobs and light switches are cleaned once a day.
Now, as we all become more aware of what we are touching and whether other people have indeed touched the same surfaces, many of us have been wondering, are takeaways and food deliveries really safe, particularly at a time when we might want to support our favourite curry houses, pizza places and so on? It's a question for our science correspondent, Victoria Gill.
The first thing to state is that COVID-19 is not a foodborne disease, and cooking would kill the virus anyway. So cooked food, you're pretty safe. What people might be concerned about, and it's what people have been expressing concern about delivering, having parcels delivered, having groceries delivered as well, is anything that anybody else has handled, whether that's people in the restaurant or delivery drivers, that's gone through other people's hands, because there is a risk of contamination through touching with contaminated hands that have the virus on. But cooked food is very, very low risk. So if you want to be very careful, and I'm sure many people do at the moment, one of the things that Professor Sally Bloomfield from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine advised was, when you receive your takeaway, a lot of places are doing no contact deliveries. So you can leave a note on your door saying, please ring the bell, leave it here and step back, or leave it in the porch. Give people clear instructions as to how you want to receive your deliveries. Take it inside. Anything that's kind of containing it on the outside, so even if that's a single use plastic bag, and sorry, everybody, take that off and dispose of it. Wash your hands before you then take the food packages out. Then take the food out of the container, unspoon it into a clean dish with a spoon, and throw away the packaging right away, and then wash your hands before you eat, and eat with a knife and fork. So those are kind of steps you can go through to pretty much eliminate risk. But it's also worth stressing, and it's something that the Food Standards Agency in the UK have said, that any business that's professional in terms of handling and preparing food will be preparing it to a good hygiene standard anyway. And if they are doing that, then there should be very, very low to no risk.
And if you want to tip your delivery person, because I think they probably are quite an important service at the moment. Should you put the tip in an envelope? What should you do to make sure that they're not handling anything that's iffy?
You know, that's an interesting point, because one of the things that supermarkets and a lot of takeaways that are doing takeaways over the counter are asking for is for people to use contactless payment, which is, of course, a lot less risk of contamination than cash. But it's worth saying that this is a very new virus. We have some evidence that it can survive on surfaces for more than a few hours, for up to 3 days. Now, the longer this virus is outside of a human body, the less infective and the less stable it becomes. So time is also sort of on our side. So I would say, if you keep a jar of cash that's there for the purposes of tipping delivery drivers, once that has been there and not handled for 3 days, it is safe. You know, time will reduce the risk here. Either shout through the window or leave it on a note for before people arrive to instruct them how you want them to receive that tip.
So no excuse not to tip your delivery staff. That was Victoria Gill. Now, the pandemic has unleashed quite a lot of musical creativity. This song is by the Ugandan musician and politician Bobby Wine.
The bad news is that everyone is a potential victim. But the good news is that everyone is a potential solution. Sensitize the masses to sanitize. Keep a social distance and quarantine.
Bobby Wine is a Member of Parliament and opposition leader who's had more than a few run-ins with the government. But in this song, Sensitise to Sanitise, he's gone back to his musical roots, joining forces with rapper Nubian Lee. He spoke to my colleague, Bola Masuro.
I'm just trying to hammer home what needs to be done, because we've been severally advised by the World Health Organization and by our different ministries of health. However, I noticed that not so many people had in the recent past taken it as serious as it deserves to be taken, myself inclusive. So I'm trying to call upon the people individually to take this upon themselves and their families, because everybody is equally responsible. We cannot just leave this matter to just the leaders and the health ministries.
When you talk about it as well, you talk about how we shouldn't take things for granted. Everybody must take charge. Are you confident that everybody is going to be able to abide by this, not to go into bars, to wash their hands, especially in situations where they may not have clean running water?
Well, I am very aware that unlike countries like Italy, where the coronavirus is ravaging their population, even with their superb healthcare system, it freaks me out to imagine what it can do to us here in Africa, particularly in Uganda with our ailing healthcare system. However, I also believe that as the people, we can do so much, especially in this time, to at least stop the spread of the disease. So whatever we can do, we must do now.
And what do you want people to do now? You have 14 confirmed cases in Uganda.
Well, it is very alarming in Uganda to see that we are getting those cases and the circumstances under which those people were able to escape quarantine or buy themselves out of quarantine. It is worrying. However, like I've said, I know that we as people, each one has the ability to stop the spread. I've been calling upon Ugandans, Africans and citizens of the world, reminding them that whoever has not already caught the coronavirus should try to make sure they don't catch it. And those that have caught it should ensure that they are the last victims of it.
That was Robert Chagulanyi Sentamu, better known as Bobby Wine. And that's it from us for now. There will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. A reminder, there is still time to send in your questions for a special coronavirus edition of the Global News podcast, which will be recorded on Monday the 30th. Anything from what it means for economies, social impact, what it might mean for the US election, as well as the illness itself. Send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And remember, we also want to hear how you are keeping cheerful during isolation. And if you can record your message telling us who and where you are, that would be helpful too. I'm Jackie Leonard. Until next time, goodbye. We'll end with a bit more Bobby Wine.
Upwork has the world's largest network of independent professionals. Let me just close this real quick. So if you need a back-end developer, a UI designer, or a project manager for 6 days or 6 months, Upwork is how.
Hey, I have this room booked at noon.
I'm just wrapping up here. Upwork professionals have the flexibility and capability to work from anywhere.
Yeah, it's 1201.
Okay, it's all yours. Which is nice if you're already low on conference rooms. Plus, they're proven, rated, and reviewed. When you need in-demand talent on demand, Upwork is how.